Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by anybody. I am joined by you guys who keep on sending in questions. I really, really appreciate the questions and the kind words that you guys send along. I don't really read compliments on the show, but I do read them when I see the reviews. I really appreciate all the kind words, and it's part of, it's a huge reason why I keep doing this. I hope that I improve your day just a little bit every day that I do record the show. So thanks for the kind words. I really, really appreciate it. We have some great questions today. We have some stuff about KD and Kawhi. We have a question about whether the Lakers can keep up with the Rockets, what the veterans or the youth and what those two halves of the team are kind of capable of, fantasy football, referees, Julius Randle and D'Angelo Russell, all that good stuff. So I'm just going to dive right into it. You guys know where to find the show. You guys know where to find me. Let's just get to it. So the first question that we have today comes from Optimistic Laker fan, friend of the show. Thank you for all of the questions that you keep sending in. This one here is about KD and Kawhi. So it reads, if the Lakers have a legitimate shot at getting KD, would you rather see them go full force after KD or hope we can get Kawhi? Also, who would play better with LeBron? Keep up the good work, man. Love the show. All right, so I would rather, KD is a better player than Kawhi. Honestly, KD, in my opinion, might go down as one of the more underrated players in league history. It's in part because of the decision he made to go to Golden State and kind of ride the coattails of the organization that was already set up there before he got there. But you know, he's a 7-footer who can dribble like a point guard and shoot from 30 feet. He also can defend the rim, as he showed in some spots last year. He has crazy length to be able to guard all over the court. He's a freak. And really, if LeBron didn't exist, we'd probably be talking about KD as maybe one of the better players in the history of basketball. And by that, I mean like top two or three talents kind of thing. Kawhi is really, really good, and I think the Lakers will be great either way. But I think KD and LeBron on the court at the same time would be damn near impossible to stop. They're just ridiculously good basketball players. And really what it comes down to when the Lakers are putting their team together is, how can we put the best combination of talent that we possibly can together? And in this case, the LeBron and KD is a little better than LeBron and Kawhi. Next question here comes from NeverWorried24. It says, please answer my question. It says, I never get my question answered, but that's crazy. I answer just about all of them. But if I do choose you, I wanted to ask if the Lakers could keep up with the Rockets with the team they have now, or would they need a trade at the deadline to get past them and go to the Western Finals if we play them before we play the Warriors? All right, so I think right now, the Warriors are slightly better than the Lakers. I need to see how... Did I say the Warriors? I mean the Rockets. I think the Rockets are slightly better than the Lakers. We need to find out how they look with Carmelo, what role he is open to. Like, if he keeps on talking this stupid stuff about how only I know when it's time to come off the bench. That's not how it works, man. Like, that's not how any of this works. I think if Carmelo is insistent upon the usage that he thinks he should play with, the amount of minutes he should play, and the Rockets don't cut him, then I think they are objectively worse than they were last year. That losing Trevor Ariza is a big deal, and replacing him with Carmelo, losing Luke Richard and Bamute is a big loss. In the regular season, he was awful. In the postseason, like just really, I almost felt bad for the guy, but he was terrible in the postseason last year, but was really good in the regular season. And those two guys on the wing against a LeBron James team is, you know, not having those guys is a heck of a loss, really. So I think in terms of regular season win totals, I could see the Rockets outstripping the Lakers. But in a playoff matchup, I might actually take the Lakers here. I really might. And I might sound crazy. I might sound like a homer for saying that. But there's quite a few questions. Like, everybody's going to point to, you know, JaVale or Lance or Beasley as the key additions here. But if you actually look 1 through 8, 1 through 9, 1 through 10 maybe, I actually like the way the Lakers stack up against Houston in a 7-game series. But you guys are more than willing and more than capable of calling me crazy on that. And then the other thing too here, I'm interested to see what James Harden looks like next season. He got his MVP award. He had the you know, some of the postseason success that people told him that he was incapable of. If you look at the pictures of him this offseason, he looks a little chunky, and maybe he's hoping to play himself into shape over the course of the season. But if he isn't right, like if he isn't MVP caliber next year alongside Chris Paul, that's a big loss for Houston to go with the other losses elsewhere on the roster. The Rockets have quite a few question marks here heading into the season, and I'll put it this way. I'm more concerned about the matchup with OKC than I am with Houston. Let me know how you feel about that stuff. At me on Twitter or shoot a review or whatever to call me stupid. It's a popular thing to do. I'm going to take a quick second, though, and when we come back, I'm going to answer an interesting question here. I'm going to read it, mostly verbatim, and basically prognosticate on what a team with just the veterans would look like compared to a team with just the youth on the team would look like. And we'll get to that here in a bit. So there is another question here in between. This is from Saul the Kid. Can you or Peter, whichever guest, name your top 5 Los Angeles sports figures? I'm going to save that for when Pete is on the show again. He and I see eye to eye on quite a few things, but that's an interesting topic that we can actually stretch into almost an entire show. I don't think we'll make an entire show, but we can at least make an entire subject or segment out of it. But this from Mr. Awesome 3000. Here's basically to sum up, we added a lot this offseason. If you took the new vets, LeBron, Rondo, Lance, JaVale, Beasley, plus a veteran minimum group to round off that roster, what would they be capable of? And then same question here regarding the youth on the roster with just Brandon Ingram, KCP, Lonzo, Kuz, et cetera, and you added peripheral veteran minimum guys to make that to fill out that roster. So I think obviously the team with LeBron on it is going to be significantly better here, right? Like it's almost more interesting to have LeBron on both teams. And you know, which team, if you were somehow able to clone LeBron and have him on a team with Rondo, Lance, JaVale, Beasley, and then veteran minimum guys, you know, kind of league average guys to fill out that roster, and you had them play against the youth on the Lakers team of Ingram, KCP, Lonzo, Kuz, etc., and LeBron, which team I would take? I actually think, man, this is a tough one. I think I would take the young guys. I think they fit a little better together. I'm really interested to see the steps that those guys take next year. And maybe I'm overvaluing development. That happens all the time in analysis. But I'm really interested to see what they look like next season alongside LeBron. And I would take them in a 1-game situation against those vets. That being said, like, you're talking about a 1-game sample size and anything can happen. So if Rondo has one of his kind of playoff Rondo games, then that team is really good. If you have Beasley just happens to go off that game, that team is really good. Same goes for Lance or if JaVale is kind of locked in that one game. I think that team is capable of doing good things, and I think that's all applicable to overall analysis of this team in saying that if basically, and this is something that I've been saying all summer, if the Lakers coaching staff goes about kind of designing the rotation around a foundation of the youth fitting around LeBron better with guys kind of, you know, veterans that they added, the Rondos, the Lances, the JaVales, and you have those guys kind of playing smaller parts than the kids. I think that's what this team, that's the way that this team is going to be at its best, or that's the best version of this team. If you reverse that and you say, and you hope that the kids can kind of fill in the gaps with the veterans that they added, I think that's a significantly worse team than, you know, vice versa. So, God, that's a fun one. In a 7-game series, I think I would take the kids over the veterans in that kind of situation. But let me know what you think. I'll ask that one to Pete too, because that's a fun hypothetical. Let's get to one more question here before we go to break, and then I'll answer the last few in the third segment. This is from Dion Martin. And this is another name that I recognize, so thank you for the multiple questions that you send in. And I'm answering this one really quickly at the end of this second segment here, because it's not quite Lakers related, but it's about fantasy football. Dion has heard me talk about my fantasy football dealings, so is asking, you know, what kind of leagues I play in and how I usually fare in those things. I'm in two leagues every year. I'm in a league with guys that I went to high school with, and they're kind of extended friends. And then I'm also in another league with basically the group of friends that I've developed kind of organically off to the side of the friends that I grew up with. And in both leagues, I've done both leagues now for about 5 years, and I've been in the finals of at least one, if not both, every single one of those years. And look, fantasy football is really random, so I'm not going to pat myself on the back for that. And I also have a lot more time. I mean, I basically, my job is to be on on the computer and looking at sports stuff, so I have a bit of an advantage there. But then it also asks for some kind of tips and stuff. So one thing that I've really kind of focused on over these last few years is I try to get as many good, steady receivers as I can, because their production is a little bit more predictable and their health is a little bit more predictable than running backs, for example, right? And, you know, for a long time, I also was focused on tight ends, because if you have an elite tight end, there are only like three of those for a while, right? That's changed a little bit. More teams are utilizing their tight end in the way that, say, Gronk was. Now, those tight ends aren't as talented as Gronk, but they've kind of, the way that position is looked at has kind of evolved. But before that evolution took place, I tried to take advantage of that market inefficiency. And look, the league is a passing league now, so it makes more sense that wide receivers would be able to produce, and they take less damage over the course of a season than a running back does, and they're put in less or fewer situations where they might legitimately get hurt and be lost for the year. So my first few picks are usually on wide receivers, then I'll go quarterback, and then in round 4 or 5 or so, that's when I really start looking at running backs. I split it 50-50 between veteran running backs whose production is a little bit more predictable. And then I also, you know, there's always one or two running backs taken early in the draft that show out. Last year I had Dalvin Cook and I was really high on him. And I think he's going to be really good this year too. So he's somebody I have my eye on. But those kinds of guys, those kinds of running backs, that's where you win leagues, is figuring out which running backs were taken in the draft and which guys are going to completely outperform expectations. And that's how you win it. So that's just my theory on it. I kind of rambled a bit. And again, I wouldn't take what I'm saying there particularly seriously, because fantasy football is really random. It's a series of 16 one-game sample sizes. I much prefer fantasy basketball, because I think it takes a little bit more skill to watch the trends of an entire season. All right, we're going to take a quick second here, and when we come back, I'm going to answer the last three questions that I have on here. One is about the Lakers' defense. One is about the refereeing now that the Lakers have LeBron on their team, and then the aforementioned hypothetical between Julius Randle and D'Angelo Russell. Sit tight for all of that here in a second. So this is from Lakers/Dodgers/Raiders. So the question starts with concern about the Lakers defensively, especially in situations where LeBron and Kuzma are the four and, you know, or the five and four respectively. I think it's fair to be concerned about that stuff. Neither guy was very good last year defensively. Neither guy was even like mediocre. Would be nice to see from either of those guys next year. But I think the way that the Lakers are going to play defense is going to help both of those guys in that they're going to switch a ton. They have other lengthy switchy perimeter defenders who can kind of carry the burden when either or both of those guys are on the court. The nice thing about LeBron and Kuzma being on the court together is that the offense is going to get a lot better, which helps your defense, because the more you score and the more you force the other team to take the ball out of the net, the more likely it is that you can set up your defense and get ready for them on the other end of the court. So those things, I would agree that any kind of skepticism about those lineups defensively is very fair, and I share a lot of that skepticism. I also think, though, that there's reason to be a little bit more optimistic than you would be about than others have been about this team. And the other thing, too, about Kuzma's defense is, A, and I've said this a few times over the course of the summer, it got better as last year went along. It really did. Now, his offense got worse, and I don't know if there's necessarily a direct correlation there or any kind of indirect or direct correlation between the two. There might be, you know, that there usually is. The more you focus on something means the less you're going to focus on something else. Or if you're working harder defensively, it means you might have less energy on the offensive end. And, you know, maybe he's really going to have to work to be able to up both of those aspects of the game. But that in and of itself is why I think he's capable of improving, is that he has a work ethic that multiple people who have seen a lot, right, have complimented. Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who is maybe the hardest worker in Hollywood, says that he was really impressed by Kuzma and tweeted about Kuzma's work ethic. And that was good to see. Kobe has taken time to take Kuzma out to dinner. He doesn't do that with anybody. And so that's the kind of confidence booster and compliment that you would like to see it from. Channing Frye, who has played with LeBron and played with other really good to great teammates over the course of his career, really complimented Kuzma's work ethic. So he and Isaiah Thomas, same thing. So Kuzma works hard enough. And it just depends on what he's focused on in those workouts. But he works hard enough to make me believe that he can actually improve on that defensive end. Now, an improvement would be getting to league average. And I think that's a fair expectation here is, hey, just get to league average. And if you get better beyond that, then you're playing with house money. But just get to league average. And that makes you all the more efficient or, you know, valuable across the court, right? So I think that's fair. And then regarding LeBron's defense, Pete has made this point a couple times, and I agree with it to a certain extent that a change of scenery, being around younger guys, the style of play that the Lakers are going to utilize is going to invigorate LeBron to a large extent. So, and if he's invigorated and if he's focused, and if the Lakers' other guys on the court kind of help ease his burden on the offensive end, then maybe he can get a little bit better defensively. And again, can he get to league average? If both those guys can get to league average defensively, given how, especially in LeBron's case, extraordinary he is on the offensive end, now you're really talking about hugely valuable basketball players. And that's really the goal here. The question, there's a second half of that question here about a trade hypothetical where they would, the Lakers would send Kuzma and Beazer Nance for Jaren Jackson Jr., you aren't getting Jaren Jackson Jr. They love him in Memphis, and for good reason. He's going to be really, 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 really good, and he's also going to be really popular in Memphis, being kind of a defensive stalwart guy who also fits the modern NBA. Like, you're not going to get him, and if you are going to get him, you're going to have to give up more than Kuzma. You'd have to give up probably Ingram, I would say, either Ingram or Lonzo. If not, I don't think you have to give up both, but you probably have to give up Ingram and Hart and maybe some other future stuff to land Jaren Jackson Jr. They're that high on him in Memphis, and you guys can take that for what you will. Next question here comes from Ryan Goat of Thrones, and it's about refereeing. The refereeing, basically, I'm going to summarize this. The refereeing for the Lakers has been kind of frustrating, right? And it's because the Lakers haven't had a Kobe on their team in recent years, right? They haven't had, and when they did have Kobe, he got the lion's share of those Kobe calls. And most of the late young guys that played with Kobe, they didn't touch the ball enough to really benefit from any kind of improved refereeing in any way, right? He had such a high usage rate that guys like Randall or Russell or whatever weren't going to get to the line frequently enough because they just didn't have the ball enough. Thanks, Byron. But with LeBron on the team now, and given the way that he plays and how many calls he gets, and also the other thing too is Lakers, like the Staples Center is going to be rocking this year. It's going, like, it's been loud over the last few years, even while the Lakers have been bad, but the Laker fan base is starved, really. And now somebody in Minnesota is probably saying, like, oh yeah, sure, you're starved, right? But Laker fans are going to be starved for good basketball. And when they see it, and Laker fans are really good at noticing good basketball and recognizing good basketball, they're going to be all the more demanding across the court. And in this case, with the louder that Staples Center gets, the more likely it is that the referees recognize that and maybe give a couple calls here and there. It's legitimate. It's been founded statistically that louder arenas lead to some more beneficial refereeing. So that's going to help. And then LeBron being on the team is going to help. All of these young guys are establishing themselves. Brandon Ingram, especially, is somebody I'm going to be watching for how he's refereed next year. They're establishing themselves in their style of play, and so that's going to help with refereeing. So I don't think now, with the games meaning more, maybe it'll feel more frustrating than it was last year or in recent years past. But I do think, though, that the actual refereeing itself, if you were to take the added leverage on each call out of it, if you were to isolate this as just caliber of refereeing, I think it's going to be better this year. More, it's going to lean a little bit more beneficially. I just made up a word. I'm an English major, so I get to do that. But it's going to be more beneficial to the Lakers, the way that these games are refereed. All right, last question here, and it's a fun one. Between D'Angelo Russell or Julius Randle, this is from Q Breezy 12. Who would you rather have back on this team, and whose future are you taking regardless of fit? So those are two different questions, and I actually am going to give two different answers. I would rather have Julius Randle on this team because the Lakers need a five who capable of the things that he does, and not having him next year is going to hurt, and it's going to hurt even more because you're going to hear a ton, you're going to see a ton of tweets, you're going to see quite a few articles about, like, wow, look what Julius Randle is doing, right? Because he's playing with Anthony Davis, and frankly, complimenting the Lakers doesn't drive enough as much traffic as crapping on them. So you're going to see a lot of the Randle love out there, so it's going to be frustrating to watch that take place with him not in a Lakers uniform. But because of fit, I would rather have Julius Randle on this team than D'Angelo Russell, and also, like, the Lakers have Lonzo Ball, and I think you can get by with Lonzo Ball and, say, KCP better than you can with, like, JaVale McGee or Zubats taking Randall's minutes, or what would have been Randall's minutes. If I'm talking about regardless of fit, and if I'm talking about just who I think has a higher ceiling. I think D'Angelo Russell has a higher ceiling than Randall, though not by much. And again, it's because the stuff that that Julius Randle does is hugely valuable for, and it's why I was so annoyed, sad, depressed, whatever word you want to use for it, when he signed in New Orleans and it looked like the Lakers just kind of were okay with it, right? Julius Randle was going to be a really good NBA player. And also, he's, other than his that freak injury, his rookie season, he's been healthier than D'Angelo Russell. So you also have to factor that in. All that said, D'Angelo Russell, as a point guard who can stretch the floor, if he gets to league average defensively, you're talking about a really good, really valuable NBA player. And I like his size at the point guard position. It's a bummer that Jeremy Lin is in Atlanta now, and we never really got to see D'Angelo Russell and Jeremy Lin play together. I think that fit would have worked really well and would have really helped D'Angelo Russell grow and improve, not just in the sense that, you know, he's going to develop naturally, but also I like the way Jeremy Lin approaches the game, and he would have been a good mentor for D'Angelo Russell. So we'll see how that turns out. I think I would take Russell's future ahead of Randall's just slightly, but in terms of fit on this team, Randall in a landslide. I would much rather have Julius Randle. All right, that'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. I just quickly, if you guys are a local business, hit me up. You got some of you already have, and thank you to those of you who have reached out. We're going to have a little bit more local flavor when it comes to the voices on this, the advertising voices on this show. You guys can hit up anthony.f.irwin@gmail.com or lakerslockedon@gmail.com. Either one of those emails will do. I'm pretty good about responding to emails. Keep these questions coming, and it can be about anything. I talked about fantasy football for 3 minutes tonight, for crying out loud. So send those questions in. Thank you to those of you who are. Have a great rest of your day. And you know, again, thank you a ton for the kind words. It means a lot. So I'm going to keep on doing this so long as those keep on coming. Have a great rest of your day, though, and I'll talk to you again probably Wednesday, maybe tomorrow. We'll see.